Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:05 Irish Summer Time. Today is June 29th, and today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, before we get started on those big themes, let's have a quick overview of what's been happening in the markets today. A couple of really quite important things have happened here. Importantly, in Japan, you had a really quite good action in the Nikkei. It was up 1.15%, over 200 points. But when you look at it over the last year, it's got a really nice progression of higher lows over the last 3 or 4 months, and it would need to break that progression to offset scope for further upside. When you look at the longer term chart of the topics, it's looking at that, I think it's 800. I'm going from memory here, but you'll see it on the longer term. It's right at the top of that long term range, and if it sustains a move above that, well, that is really going to spell a much more bullish outlook for the Japanese market. In Australia, you had a relatively quiet day. It was up only 9.3 points, but that was following a good day yesterday, so it was able to hold on to some of those gains. Europe, really quite a firm day, particularly for the DAX, up over 1%, 85 points. And that really shows us there that there's a progression of higher lows there as well, which has certainly been maintained. I think for over the medium term, 7,500 is probably the big number there on the DAX. But as long as it maintains that progression of higher lows, we can certainly give it the upside the benefit of the doubt. Looking at Canada, again, up over 1% here, well, exactly 1% right now, 137 points. So a good strong action there. The Canadian dollar a little bit weaker in here today. That does look like the central bank is acting there. They have been talking about it, and they may well be acting to slow the advance of the currency, because the dollar is quite weak against other currencies in here today. I've just pulled up the Canadian dollar. The low is below 105 today. It's at 106 right now. It's up 20 ticks on the day. So it does look like you're seeing the Canadian government acting there, because when you look at some of the other currencies, the euro is at, excuse me, 135.35. It's up 85 ticks. Against the Swiss franc, the dollar is weaker by 95 ticks. It's at 122.17. And against the pound is at $2.65, up 37 ticks. So we're seeing dollar weakness against the major currencies. And when you see it against the Canadian dollar, that does point towards some sort of intervention to slow the advance of the Canadian dollar. A couple of other important points here. For example, oil up over a dollar here today. It's up $1.07, over $70 again, 70.64. This is really an important move. It's breaking upwards from that very short consolidation above the 2 or 3 month range. It's looking comfortable in here at this level. And while we have been predicting that oil would be in a sort of type of ranging consolidation, more going sideways than trending, it does look like it's going to move up a bit more in here right now. So that is going to be something that will weigh as oil comes back to hit the headlines. It has been relatively quiet for the last 4 or 5 months really, but as oil pushes above $70, we can anticipate that there's going to be a lot more headlines in this area. Natural gas is another noteworthy commodity. It's up about 10 points today, but it had really quite a bad day yesterday. I remember when David got in yesterday morning, we had a chat, and we were looking at natural gas saying, gosh, it's fallen a lot, and it had rallied at that point, but it closed well down yesterday. And while it's up a little bit in here today, it's at 6.75, and considering it wasn't that long ago, it was at $8. So this is characteristically volatile. But the lower it goes, the bigger the rally we're going to have when it does start to move upwards. Looking at the precious metals, silver is down a little bit here today. It's at 1247, but nothing really spectacular. Gold is at up 110, it's at 650, 650 being the big round number. So while we've had that pretty aggressive sell-off last week, or the early part of this week, it hasn't had very much follow through in subsequent days, and I think that there isn't too much cause for panic, although personally I'm not going to invest in the precious metals because I think the risks are just that bit too high. The other particularly noteworthy area here are the grains. You had an important report come out today saying that The acreage gone under corn this year is higher than expected, so corn has fallen. It's down 6 right now. It's at 333. It has been as low as 323, so that's, you can see how volatile that has been. But soybeans, they're up 45 and a quarter points right now. So that's a pretty stunning upward dynamic from support around 800. And while wheat rallied initially, it gave up most of it, and that has been a particularly volatile commodity in here. But the important point here is that there isn't as much of the stuff around as people had anticipated. And while the trading has been really quite volatile today, there hasn't been any damage done to the pretty consistent uptrends in corn and wheat. Sorry, not corn, soybeans and wheat, excuse me. So we can give the upside the benefit of the doubt there. Corn has been hit really rather aggressively over the last couple of weeks. And given the fact that there has been more of it planted this year than I think any other time in recent history at least, the chances of that moving aggressively upwards, well, it really would need some sort of outside movement there. The government bonds are also worthy of mention. Yesterday, the JGBs had a downward dynamic, and today there was a countermanding upward dynamic. Personally, I wasn't expecting that, but there you go. And that probably gives the upside a bit of a push there towards, if it was relatively balanced before, I think we can probably give the upside the benefit of the doubt if we were going to take a trade there. But you look at treasuries, they're up 24, so 107, and the 10-year is up 13 points. So we are seeing a little bit of a strength here, and that's because you had some news that moderated the inflationary fears in the US today. Now, looking at some of the longer term themes, let's start with government bonds, because when you look at those long term yield charts, and I think probably the best one to look at is the 10-year yield in the USA, because you've got such an amount of history. You had an incredible run on yields in about 20 years ago, and since then, government bond prices have been in a phenomenal bull market, and that ended, we think, at least in 2003. But that also, the biggest bear markets lead to the biggest bull markets, and vice versa. So when you've had such an enormous move over the last 20 years in government bonds, and if that has ended in 2003, we can anticipate that we're going to enter one of the biggest bull markets in the same asset class over, sorry, we're going to enter one of the biggest bear markets for prices. I'm getting myself mixed up with prices and yields. I'm going to stick with yields. One of the biggest bull markets for yields over the next 20 years. And with rising government bond yields, that will have massive knock-on effects for other areas of the economy. Now, there is still a large debate as to how much we can be certain that the bull market for bond prices has ended. And the fact of the matter is that there is incredible supply. Now, there are massive rationalizations saying that funds have to buy them, they have to get the yield. But given the fact that the yields are really quite low, and the fact that there are just so many bonds about, also the fact that the world has been absolutely flooded with liquidity. And over time, Asian central banks, who have been buying really an awful lot of the treasury bond, may not have to do so for very much longer. When we hear people saying that the renminbi needs to appreciate, well, I think it is certain that the renminbi needs to appreciate, but part of the reason, or part of the mechanism that the Chinese have been using to maintain their currency peg has been buying treasuries. So if they're going to let their currency appreciate, do they really need to be buying so many treasuries or so many dollars? Probably not. So just looking at that alone, that's part of an argument to say that the bull market for bond prices is over. But that's certainly not the only reason. When we look at the inflationary pressures, inflation is always and everywhere a monetary issue. think that is well doc or that is well accepted. And given the fact that central banks have been printing money with abandon over the last 10 to 15 years, then the fact is that central banks have been afraid of deflation. And in their efforts to combat deflation, they have seeded the new inflationary cycle. Back in the 90s, you had central banks bailing out long-term capital management and the Russian debt default. Then you had the Asian financial crisis, Y2K, the Nasdaq bubble. Then you had 9/11, and all of these events were met by what has often been referred to as the Greenspan put, where central banks have intervened to support markets, and they've done that by flooding the market with liquidity. Now, liquidity can be found in a number of, or can be measured in a number of different ways. You have the price of liquidity, which are interest rates. And interest rates have been at historically low levels, and following the Nasdaq crash, interest rates hit remarkably low levels, and we'll probably never see them that low again. At least not in this cycle, and it may be 40 or even 50 years before we get to this part of the cycle again. So you have the price of money, then you have the quantity of money. Now, I'm not talking about money in people's pockets, but what is I think more important is the amount of money passing between electronic systems, or between in the repo market, the euro dollar market, or the amount of credit that is being produced by various banking organizations, and that has absolutely exploded. Then you also have the rules under which people can borrow money, and those are particularly lax at this point in time. In Western economies, we have been, our central bankers have been remarkably reluctant to tackle this area at all. But that may happen at some point in the future when the inflationary pressures become very much more serious, and I think we're a number of years away from that just yet. But given the amount of liquidity that has flooded the market, this has had a number of effects. Now, one of them is that it has seeded the new inflationary cycle, and in an inflationary cycle, bonds generally don't do very well, but fixed assets do very well. So we are in a new commodity super cycle. That's the inflationary side of that argument. However, the other side of it is that because of the massive GDP growth in Asia and the fact that emerging markets eventually do emerge, we are seeing 5 billion people in the emerging markets entering the global economy. Globalization has allowed vast numbers of people to come to the market, and they aspire to the type of the standard of living that we in the West take for granted. That means that the demand for all types of commodities is set to increase, not just over the last 3 or 4 years, but probably over the next 20 years. Commodity super cycles generally tend to last for a very long time, and we're still comparatively early in this one. Of course, prices don't go up in a linear fashion, and as we've seen, many commodities can go up beyond our wildest dreams, but then they can come down quite aggressively and they can go sideways for years. But over the next decades, we can expect these commodities to continue to rise over the long term. And probably the best of the strategies is just to get into these and hold on to them. For leverage trading, that's very, very difficult because with leverage, you need to have stops or you'll just get wiped out. But for the long-term investor, getting into the commodity super cycle or the Asian growth story and just sticking with it is probably the very best thing to do. Looking at the growth of liquidity or the way liquidity has flooded the markets, this has had obviously massive effects on the equity markets. That incredible flood of liquidity into markets has obviously found its way well into the equity markets. Now, when you look at Japan, when Japan crashed at the in the late 80s, early 90s, that was because they appointed a new central banker, I think Mr. Mieno, And he squeezed the economy for much longer than was needed. He really killed it off, and he succeeded so well that he threw the economy into deflation. That scared central bankers just about everywhere, and they weren't going to let the same thing happen to their economies. So when there was deflationary pressure at the turn of the century in the US, they certainly weren't going to allow that to happen there. And they flooded their market with liquidity. Now, we're on the record as saying that Wall Street is in a bear market. And anyone who hears that and then looks at the charts would say, well, how can you say that? Because the Dow Jones and the S&P are making new highs, or at least have made new highs in the last month. But we define a bear market as a generational long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And we are definitely seeing PE contraction over the last 5 years. Now, PEs have gone up recently, but over the last 5 to 7 years, they have come down significantly, and we do anticipate them to come down further over the next 5 years. But when you look at the Nikkei and then you look at the S&P, they can't be compared like for like because the liquidity situation has been remarkably different between the two. When you look at the S&P, the rally that we've had over the last 5 years has been fueled by the amount of liquidity that has been pumped into global markets. And even though the S&P has rallied and gone on to make new highs, it has been a laggard globally. Other markets have performed much, much better. We often refer to that as the Wall Street leash effect. When Wall Street is steady to rising, those other markets, which are high beta and just about every stock market, with the possible exception of China, is high beta to Wall Street because the vast majority of the money in the world is denominated in dollars. US investors are the largest holders of dollars, and Wall Street has a very, very long reach. So when Wall Street is steady, as we see right now, not over the last couple of weeks, but over the last 4 years, we've had a synchronized period of global economic expansion that has allowed other markets to perform remarkably well on the upside. And while the S&P has done well, it hasn't compared with other markets, for example, like China or like India or a number of other emerging markets, much of Asia, Malaysia, Indonesia, other countries like that. So that is something that we need to be aware of. While we can expect pretty good returns when we're in periods of synchronized global expansion in the developed countries, we can expect much better ones in the emerging markets. And because you have this vast number of people coming into the global economy, into the global marketplace, and starting to compete with the developed economies, you have countries like India and China. They've pretty much taken over the mantle of GDP leadership or growth leadership from those developed countries, and they're likely to maintain that over the next decades. So for those big long-term themes, developing Asia, India is our favorite market for our favorite emerging market for the very long term. And China is well up there as well. Big difference between them is governance, but China is certainly improving in that regard, although communism, in my personal opinion, is congenitally corrupt, is a congenitally corrupt system. And you're never going to, if, I mean, as long as that's in place, China's never going to be a paragon of governance. But at the same time, they are seeking to promote their stock market, and things are looking really very positive there at the moment. Because you have these vast numbers of people coming through, the bull market in all commodities is well underway. Of particular note is the energy complex, because while metals can be recycled, energy can't. And oil, they've been pumping oil out of Saudi Arabia for 60 or 70 years, and I don't know how much of it there is, but I do know that it is inexhaustible. Oil is a finite resource, and sooner or later, the easy stuff to get out of the ground is going to disappear. And then they'll have to move down the triangle or the pyramid and look for those wells that are that bit more expensive to exploit. We're never going to run out of oil, but we are going to run out of cheap oil. And with higher oil prices over the long term, that is going to have a major effect on the inflationary figures for most countries. But it will also provide an excellent opportunity for investors to exploit that particular sector. The grain complex at the moment is also worthy of mention, because this is the first bull market in grains which has benefited from an excess of demand. All other bull markets in the grain complex have been short and sharp. It's been because there's been a crop failure one year, and that has been compensated by for in the next year. But this time around, I mean, we have had excellent crops for the last 10 years and counting. And yet, global stockpiles of grains are at record lows. Now, while corn is the big story because of ethanol, and while producing ethanol from corn is by far the least efficient way of doing it, it is certainly the big investment story at the moment. But that's not the case for wheat, and it's not the case for soybeans. And yet, the global stockpiles for those commodities is also very low, even following record bumper crops. And that is because as Asia develops, the dietary needs, or not even needs, but wants of populations change. And the more money you have, the better you want to eat. It's a sign of wealth if you can eat well. And I know that eating for me is one of the great pleasures, which it does no favors to my waistline, but I'm certainly not alone in enjoying that passion. And that is something that is impacting grain prices right now. It also means that the bull market in this particular sector may last for longer than a year. It has already lasted for more than a year, and it could last for significantly longer. And again, that will have inflationary pressures. So that leads us into the precious metal sector. Gold has often been a hedge against inflation, but there are other reasons to own gold. Gold is a scarce commodity. It has growing industrial uses. It is a superconductor, but it is also has massive use for in the jewelry sector and as an investment vehicle. Together with the fact that there is less of it being produced now than in recent than in previous cycles, and given the fact that it has also been in a phenomenal bear market. Now, that bear market is over, but it is still relatively cheap in inflation-adjusted terms. And if you think gold is cheap in inflation-adjusted terms, silver is even cheaper. So the potential for growth in those markets is also enormous. One of the benefits of the gold market is that it is large and liquid, so it is easy to trade in those, and it is not nearly as volatile as the grains, which may be easier for some investors. Looking at the currency markets, again, it is that global liquidity story. Now, gold is as a hedge against inflation, and because of that liquidity flooding the market, you have the issue that all currencies are fiat. And given the fact that they're just paper, the value of physical assets, and gold in particular, gain that just that bit more importance. So when we look at particularly the reserve currencies like the euro, the pound, the yen, and the dollar, and the Swiss franc, they don't tend to trend very much, because in the competitive world of globalization, no country wants a strong currency. So, given the fact that we know that M3 is exploding at a rate of over 10% in the Eurozone, and that interestingly is well above their target rate, I think, of just over 4%, And because the euro is actually appreciating versus the dollar, but not appreciating too quickly, we can anticipate that the dollar, or the US, is also printing M3 in excess of 10%, maybe a little bit less than that, but not too much less than that. So we're unlikely to see very big trends between the reserve currencies. That's not the case, though, for the Asian currencies, because the Asian currencies are still relatively undervalued following the Asian financial crisis. And because the really big one there, the Chinese renminbi, is appreciating, although slowly, that is allowing some of those other currencies to also appreciate. When we look at the Asian dollar index, that is breaking upwards from a long-term base, and it is trending upwards now. The currency that most easily approximates that is the Singapore dollar, probably followed by the Korean won. And that's those are probably the best currencies to reflect the reflation of Asia. And of course, because Asian currencies are appreciating and it's a fantastically strong growth area, and their stock markets are doing particularly well and governance is improving, it's probably the very best area in the world to be investing in today and indeed for the future. But with that thought, I will leave you to it, and I hope you enjoy a very good evening, or indeed a weekend, I should say.